Okay, hello everybody, and welcome to another week of answering your Shilas Parshas Pikudei. So again, we have 10 Shilas that came in this week, and let's go through them one by one. Number one, why is it important to buy milk, eggs, bagged salads, and baby carrots before Pesach, according to the CRC? I don't know if I can answer all of those questions, but I think I can answer some of them. It's important to realize that chametz is aser. Whenever you have a food that is aser, whenever you have machalos asuros that gets mixed in with kosher food, then there's a concept called bittul. Generally speaking, in order for non-kosher to become batel, in kosher food you need a 60-to-1 ratio of kosher to non-kosher, and that's what we call bittul b'shishim. Chametz is unique in that chametz is aser b'mashehu. So if you have one little crumb of chametz or one little drop of chametz that gives tam, or it doesn't even give tam, gets mixed into to massive amounts of non-chametz, the entire tarovas, the entire mixture, is going to be aser. However, while that's true, that chametz is also b'mashehu, the Ramah in Simin Taf Mem Zayin writes that if chametz is lach b'lach, if you have chametz that is moist, that just blends right in and does not remain an independent entity, it blends in with non-chametz, then it becomes batel before Pesach, and then it can remain batel on Pesach. See, if it's yavish b'yavish, if let's say you have one crumb of chametz that gets mixed into matzah crumbs, so no matter how much, even if it gets mixed in before Pesach, it will always be aser and it's always going to be a problem. But if you have a little bit of moisture of chametz, let's say a drop of a chametz drink that falls into a large chicken soup, and it all gets mixed together, so if that were to happen on Pesach, the whole chicken soup would be aser. But if it happens before Pesach, the chicken soup is going to be mutter, because it becomes batel in advance of Pesach. So the reason that they tell you to buy milk before Pesach, so if the milk says OUP, the milk is kashal Pesach, certified kashal Pesach, then you have nothing to worry about. But the reason they tell you to buy before Pesach if it's non-certified milk is because there are vitamins that sometimes they add into milk to reinforce the milk. So if the milk was bottled before Pesach, the milk can be eaten on Pesach because those vitamins are certainly lach b'lach. It's all moisture. You're never going to find a crumb in the milk on Pesach. So it's obviously all moisture, and therefore it's going to be batel before Pesach. But you have to make sure that bittel happened before Pesach. So that's the reason for the milk. But let's say it were rice cereal or something. So rice cereal is only kitneous, and children are allowed to eat kitneous. But if it's made on the same equipment that wheat cereals are made on, then you're going to have a problem, because if a drop of wheat is in that rice cereal, it will never become batel. Even before Pesach, it doesn't become batel, meaning it's chozer v'neir on Pesach itself. You're going to have to worry about it. That's as far as milk. Now, eggs, do not have to be certified for Pesach. It's true of white eggs and brown eggs. However, if you're going to use eggs that are not certified for Pesach, the kashrus organizations do suggest that you should buy it before Pesach. Why? Get this. Because they use ink to mark the eggs, and it could be that there is chametz in the ink used to mark the eggs, or in the water used to wash the eggs. Now, if any of that happened before Pesach, that would obviously become batel. It seems like a very far-fetched chashash that such ink would even be a problem. So I don't know. There is a tradition of having extra chumras for Pesach. So this is one of those traditions of having extra chumras for Pesach. I don't know on a normal situation, whether a person would normally be machmir for these things, but considering that we take extra chumras for Pesach, so might as well buy special kosher certified kosher Pesach eggs or whatever it may be. I suspect that the bagged salads, because they may be cutting it with knives that or whatever, and the baby carrots, I would imagine the same thing. So we want whatever chametz is there to be bottled before Pesach. That's my suspicion, that it's all the same issue. Okay, question number two. How can one best maintain kashrus during Chol HaMoed Pesach in a large shared kitchen with about 20 college students, especially when not everyone is careful about checking ingredients and hechsherim. Now, if you have a chametzdika kitchen, then you really have a problem. Meaning, and if you have a treifa kitchen, you have a problem all year round. Meaning, if people are not careful about checking ingredients and hechsherim, this is not just a Pesach question. This is a year-round question. So obviously, I would avoid that kitchen if possible on Pesach. Whatever food you have should be coming from outside of that kitchen. Should not be made in that kitchen unless you have your own designated pots that nobody else uses. I wouldn't use a single surface or a dish or anything in that kitchen. I would only go into the kitchen to take something out of the refrigerator, perhaps, or to double wrap something and heat it up. But one needs to be very, very, very careful about having a kitchen where there's access to, Rav Schachter once remarked that I don't understand how people have non-Jewish housekeepers and babysitters in their house. They should probably kosher their kitchen every single time they come home from work in the evening. So I don't know too many other posts that suggest that you do that. But, there is something about that, about realizing that if people are not careful about kashrus, they should not have access to your kitchen. So that seems like a very tough situation throughout the year. There are probably details I'm missing. It would be a lot easier to answer the shayla with further details. Question number three. If a Kohen is in Israel, can he rely on the lenient opinion that the essence of Kedusha is just Kadosh, 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 and Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkomo, so that he has enough time to reach the Bima for Duchening? So I think so. Meaning, I know that the mitzvah of Nesias Kapayim is a mitzvah Midaraisa. Standing with your feet together for the entirety of Kedusha, I think it's only a minute. I don't even think it's a mitzvah midrabanan. So I'm not a Kohen, but I'm trying to figure out why the experience of trying to get up to the Bima on time would be problematic because of Kedusha. I mean, isn't there enough time in between? I'm not a Kohen. I never experienced this. I never had the rush to go out and wash my hands and take my shoes off and go up to the Duchen. I never had this experience. So, but if it really were to come to that, accepting the Metzius as it's described, I think you can. I think you could just stay with your feet together for those critical parts of Kedusha. Question number four. Can an Ashkenazi eat at a Sephardi home on Pesach if the meal is non-kitnius, but prepared in pots that were used for kitnius within the past 24 hours and have been cleaned? I think the answer is yes. As long as you trust the kashrus in the home and the people are very careful about their kashrus. So I think kitnius is a minhag. Rav Shachter used to often point out to us, still does, that kitnius is a minhag, and the halacha is, we spoke about bittul before, normally you require bittul b'shishim, for something that's only asher mitam minhag, bittul b'rov works. Rav Shachter once commented back in the day, and this goes back already, probably close to 30 years that I heard it from him. He said, if you're on an airplane, Chol Hamoed Pesach, and they don't have any kosher Pesach Coca-Cola, and this was before everyone drank water and other things. It used to be Coke was the beverage of choice for everybody in the entire world. People didn't care about the fact that they were essentially, putting corn syrup, motor oil in their teeth and in their systems. It's mamish poison. That was the beverage of choice. It's still a pretty popular beverage. But he said, if you have Coca-Cola that's not kosher l'Pesach, probably you're allowed to drink it because it's probably already batel barov. Meaning, whatever it is, what was in the Coke, it was corn syrup. Corn syrup is kitnius. Kitnius becomes batel barov. I don't know if that metzius is still true. For all I know, there's chametz in the non-kosher l'Pesach Coke. So why is it that they even make everybody crazy to do kosher l'Pesach Coke if it's all going to be batel barov anyway? So the reason they make everybody crazy is because there is a din called Ein Mevatlin Isra L'Chachila, that even though something could be batel, if it were to happen, you're not allowed to make it happen. You're not allowed to make a mixture of something that's asur and something mutzer. Whenever you give hashgacha, it's as if you're saying, I hereby authorize you to do this. Meaning, when I'm going to put my OU on your product, I'm saying that I am authorizing you to make this mixture with these ingredients. And I cannot do that. I'm not allowed to be mevatel kitnius. But if it happened, it's batel barov. So I don't think the issur of kitnius extends to the tam from the kalim. And I don't think it would be a problem. It would be mutter. Question number five. After a 12-hour flight from Eretz Yisrael, during which I alternated between sleeping and learning, I arrived at 6 p.m., assuming Shkia is in an hour, and stayed up all night. What are the halachic implications regarding brachos, pechstor, and tzitzis, meaning arrived at 6 p.m. and then stayed up all night the following night? That's what I'm assuming the person did. So they slept and learned and slept and learned during the daytime and then stayed up the following night. So what do you do as far as Birchas HaTorah and Tzitzis is concerned? So first of all, when it comes to Birchas HaTorah, meaning this is obviously a Shavuos Shaila. This comes up every year for people to stay up all night on Shavuos. So there are a lot of cases where Birchas HaTorah and Shavuos comes up, meaning if someone slept a Sheinas Keva during the day on Erev Yom Tov or on Yom Tov of Shavuos, then do you say Birchas HaTorah when you get up? So even though the Shulchan Aruch quotes two Shitos and Paskins that you should not say these brachos, and Mishnah Berurah says that you are allowed to say these brachos, the Birchas HaTorah, even though you're not chayiv to do so. If you did not sleep at all during the night, should you say Birchas HaTorah in the morning? So that's a machlokas. Mishnah Berurah says that you should not say the brachos on your own, because something brachos lahakel. So you should hear the brachos from someone else when it's possible to do so, or have in mind to fulfill the chiyuv of saying Birchas HaTorah when you say Ava Rabba. If you hear them from someone else, it's not so clear whether you should answer Amen after Lasok B'divrei Sora. Now, in those scenarios that we described, that's if you didn't sleep a Shinas Keva on Erev Shavuos. Our case seems to be the person slept a bunch on the plane. So you might have slept a Shinas Keva before staying up all night. And Mishnah Berurah quotes from Rabbi Akiva Eiger in Hilchos Shavuos that if you sleep a Shinas Keva on Erev Shavuos, then you should say Birchas HaTorah in the morning after staying up all night. So the Chavra, that's the same over here. The person slept a Shinas Keva on the plane at some point. He was in and out of sleep, but probably counts as a Shinas Keva for the amount of time that most people typically do sleep on a plane. Probably got at least an hour or two straight of sleep, and then you would say Birchas HaTorah the next morning, according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger. So I think that's true. I think that's what we do. As far as tzitzis, the generally speaking, if a person wears a talis gadol, so then you say the bracha, even though you're already wearing a talis katan, because you're putting on a new beged. If you don't wear a talis, then you don't say a bracha on your talis katan. So you just listen to the bracha from someone else. Meaning, if you've been wearing your tzitzis all night, so then you would just listen to the bracha from someone else. Okay, question number six. What halacha considerations should someone who does not eat gebraks be aware of when eating at the home of someone who does? So a couple of things about gebraks. In a certain sense, it's more chamer than kidneys, because it's not really something that's aser mitam minag. It's aser mitam chashash, that the minag is to be choshesh that it's chamet. Not just to be choshet, meaning when it comes to kidneys, it's very likely that the reason kidneys is aser is because it resembles chamet, not because we think it's actually chamet. There are different reasons for kidneys. That's one of the reasons. One of the reasons is that you actually are concerned that masha who chamet got mixed in. But let's assume that it's because it resembles chamet. That potato starch is so, well, not potato starch, but whatever it is, corn starch is so similar to flour, to wheat flour, that you might confuse them for each other. It resembles chamet. But when it comes to gebraks, it's a chashash chimutz. The concern is that if you have dry flour on the surface of your matzah and you stick it into water, that flour is going to actually become chametz. So the minug of gebraks is to treat it as if it is chametz, and therefore, when one keeps gebraks, they can't eat off of kalim that are used for non-gebraks. So you cannot eat soup out of a bowl that's used for non-gebraks. I remember when my sister got married, my brother-in-law has the minhag of not eating gebraks. And it was a big shaila. What should they do when they come to my parents' home? In our family, we always did eat gebraks. So is my brother-in-law allowed to eat out of the kalim? So I remember I called Rav Shachter at the time, and he said, no, he should not eat out of the kelim. You should designate a separate bowl and a separate plate and whatever, and that will be what he eats out of. Now, some are noheg gebrucht light. You know, they take on the minhag, but not with all the full force of the minhag. They just won't eat it, but they'll eat out of kelim that are gebrucht. Okay, you know, different people have different levels of observance of chassidish minhagim. You know, there are a lot of people that have chassidish minhagim for certain things, but don't appear to be chassidim in other areas. What can you do? I once asked Rav Shachter. I remember at that time when my sister got married, is it an option for my brother-in-law, not that he was offering to do this, but is it an option for my brother-in-law to just be mater neder, and then he won't have to keep gebrachs anymore? That's one of the rabbanim. There used to be an alter yid, a Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Naiman, Zichron al-Vracha, who lived in Lawrence. My parents used to daven by him, and he was a yid who learned b'chavrusa with Rav Elchanan Wasserman. So I remember he told my father, all right, let your son, he's a Litvak, a real Litvak. He spoke Yiddish like a Litvak. So he told my father, okay, so tell your son-in-law to be Matir Neder. But Rav Shachter said, no, you can't be Matir Neder on something like that. What can you be Matir Neder on if you have your own personal chumrah, your own personal hanhaga? That's what you can be Matir Neder on. But when it's a communal minhag, a communal hanhaga, a communal chumrah, then you cannot be Matir Neder on that. So long as you're part of that community, the Mishnayis and Pesachim tell us that if you go from Makum Shenoheg, Lechol, to a place that they're knowing not to do malacha, those are communal minhagim. You have to do, as soon as you move, you become part of that community, and you have to observe those minhagim. A person cannot matir neder his way out of a community. How do you get out of communal minhagim? If you join a different community. So even though it's weird nowadays, because let's say I live in the Five Towns area, so within the Five Towns area, even within North Woodmere itself, we have a modern Orthodox shul, we have a centrist Orthodox shul, we have a chassidish shul, a yeshiva shul, right? So what do you mean communal minhagim? They all have different minhagim. Yeah, so it became a little mixed together, but each of those minhagim that we keep, many are communal minhagim, and we just define community, not by geography, but by affiliation. So someone who's a chassid follows the communal minhagim of chassidim, and someone who's modern Orthodox follows the communal minhagim of modern Orthodox. Whatever it might be. So how do you change the minhagim? You move out of that community. Meaning if, let's say, we had a kid when I was teaching in DRS, the very first year in DRS, in the history of DRS, there was a young man from Jamaica Estates, modern Orthodox, wonderful family. His brother is actually a very close friend of mine, very, very close friend of mine. And this young man, after he graduated DRS, went to Eretz Yisrael, became a full-on Breslov or Chassid, and lives in Mei Sha'arim, the only places he's ever been, his children had ever been, rather, are Uman and Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. He now speaks English with an accent when he speaks English. Mamish, full chassid. So you're going to tell me he has to keep all the modern Orthodox minhagim because that's his family, that's his minhag? No, he moved out of the community. He joined a different community. Now that he joined a different community, he's bound by the minhagim of his community. So if I decide that I'm going to be chassidish, or that I'm going to be I'm going to move into a Yekki community and live my life like a German Jew, so good. So then I take on all of those minhagim. But to start saying I'm going to undo this minhag, not that, so you can't do that. So gebrucht, Rav Shachter holds, is a communal minhag, so you cannot be matir neder your way out of it. You got to keep it, unless you decide that you're not going to keep any of the chassidish minhagim because you're leaving the chassidic community. Okay, question number 7. How should one structure their Shabbos meals, including Shalosh Shudos, when Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos? So first of all, I just want to point out, the fact that we spend so much time trying to figure out how we're going to accommodate Shalosh Shudos, how could you be Yotzei this important mitzvah of Shalosh Shudos, should highlight to us that we hold Shalosh Shudos is really, really important. And throughout the year, we should be makbid about Shalosh Shudos. That should be something. Someone pointed out a beautiful thought to me also. This year, our Malava Malka is going to be the most splendid Malava Malka that Shabbos, that week. The Malava Malka is going to be the first Seder. Maybe we could use that as a chizik to try to be a little more makbid about Malava Malka in general. But anyway, going back to Shalosh Shuras, so let's remind ourselves that we hold Shalosh Shuras is really important. Everyone's chayv in Shalosh Shuras. Men, women are chayv in Shalosh Shuras. Machlokes Rishonim, why women are chayv in Shalosh Shuras, but they absolutely are chayv in Shalosh Shuras. But that puts us in a pickle, because there is an Isser Midaraisa to eat chametz after Chatzos and Erev Pesach, and an Isser Drabanan to eat chametz even earlier than that. So you can't have challah at Shalosh Shuras, right? Then you say, okay, so I'll have matzah. You can't eat matzah the whole day on Erev Pesach, because the Yerushalmi says, kol ochel matzah b'Erev Pesach is kilu bol arusasa b'es chama. If you eat matzah on Erev Pesach, it's like sleeping with a girl who you only have erusin with while she's still living in her father's house. Rav Yonasan Sachs once said that he once mentioned that Yerushalmi, and one of the Balabatim came over to him afterwards and said, Rebbe, I tried both and they don't seem at all the same as one another. But obviously the point of the Yerushalmi is to say that it's jumping the gun. You're going ahead and doing something that you're not holding at yet, that you're not at that stage yet. So you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. So now what do you do? If you can't eat matzah the whole day on Erev Pesach, you're not allowed to eat chametz, you're already starting sometime in the morning on Erev Pesach. So what do you do? And to add more trouble, there's a sheet of many Rishonim, of Tosus and the Rosh, that Shalosh Shuras Dafka has to be in the afternoon. The Rambam holds it's got to be after Mincha in the afternoon. So as far as I know, there are four acceptable solutions. The Rabbeinu Tam and the Ritva say, you just eat Minei Targima, meaning one could be Yotzei Shalosh Shuras with just eating something less than what you wash on. It's just not the best way to be Yotzei in the midst of Shalosh Shuras. But Shasatcha Kediyah V'dami, and this is a Shasatcha, and therefore we could be Yotzei B'diyavet. Second opinion is the Rashba and the Ran. They say you could eat Shalosh Shuras in the morning. And even though we mentioned before that Tosfos and the Rosh hold you cannot, Mishnah Berurah says you can rely on the opinion that you're allowed to eat Shalosh Shuras in the morning for this particular Shabbos, even though it's against the Shulchan Aruch, who normally is makbid that you wait for Zman Mincha. Yet you just have to be careful not to risk a bracha sheina tzricha by having the two meals in quick succession, one after the other. So you have to have a break between the meals, which means you got to daven really early. Third is the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan and the Magen Avraham, in the name of the Zohar, says that you're yotze with learning Torah. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, what do you mean yotze with learning Torah? Learning Torah is not a meal. What it means is you're pater. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it, that there's generally a mitzvah of Shalosh Shuras, but when it's impossible, and therefore you're pater. The Kaf HaChaim, though, takes it more literally. He says, no. The Zohar is saying that you could actually be Yotze with Torah, because if you know the Kabbalistic meaning behind each mitzvah, so you know what each mitzvah that you do, what button it pushes up in Shemayim, what it affects up in Shemayim, this and that, so then you can know, and you know which parts of Torah that you learn will affect things up in Shemayim. You could learn the part of Torah that corresponds to that mitzvah. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai knew exactly which elements of Torah to learn that were going to make the same impact in Shemayim that Shalosh Shuras would have made up in Shemayim. But says Kaf Chaim, we can't rely on that. The fourth approach is Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, just use matzah ashira. Just take a matzah that you cannot be yotze at the Seder with. So any matzah that you cannot be yotze with at the Seder, you're allowed to eat on Erev Pesach. That's not a problem of eating on Erev Pesach. So use matzah ashira and you'll be fine. Matzah ashira would be egg matzah or grape juice matzah or something like that. I think Rav Shechter told us that that's his preferred choice, to eat the Shalosh Shuras at the normal time, and to use matzah ashira, and if you kaveh suda on it, you could wash on matzah ashira. Okay, question number 8. How can one prepare meaningfully for Pesach in the Seder, especially when it can feel long, hectic, or not enjoyable? I assume that means the Seder can feel long, hectic, and not enjoyable. You know, my friend Rav Judah, Michelle, likes to say, to embrace the imperfections. Nobody's Seder is perfect. And, you know, you'll appreciate in the long run all the fights and all the yelling and all the, you know, why isn't this one ready? And, you know, whatever goes on at the Seder. But you know what it's like? It's like when a family goes to Disney World. Disney World is the worst place on earth. It is not the happiest place on earth. It's horrible. But there's that picture with everyone in the Mickey Mouse ears in front of the castle, and that's what they remember. They don't remember the fact that everyone was at each other's throats, you know, in the car ride on the way from the hotel to Disney. They don't remember everyone exhausted on the plane ride on the way back. You remember the smiles and whatever. So the Seder, Lahavdil, is like Disney World. It's a kind of thing that is such an experiential event that even if it doesn't go exactly the way you would have loved it to go, and it's just something that you look back on And you'll always have fond memories and you'll always remember the best parts of it. Family stories develop at the Seder. Family jokes develop at the Seder. So it's important to try your best to be happy. Just embrace it. Just smile, laugh, be easygoing. Don't get anxious at the Seder. I would also say, if you're trying to promote conversation, prepare questions, not answers. Meaning, don't try to think of how many Geshmaka Divrei Torah I'm going to say. How many Geshmaka Divrei Torah? You know, when someone stops you and says, I got a Divrei Torah for you, how attentively do you listen in general to Divrei Torah? And if someone says, do you have 2 hours? I have some Geshmaka Divrei Torah for you. Would you sit and listen to someone just tell you Geshmaka Divrei Torah for 2 hours? Some tzaddikim might. But most of the time, I think people would lose patience with that. But if you have something to think about, the conversation starter. So that's something that's much, much better if it's a conversation starter. I would also say something that worked last year, I suggested to my shul, is that, you know, Shechter often likes to talk about how all the Ikari Amunah appear in the Haggadah. So you're supposed to talk about the Ikari Amunah in the Haggadah. So I suggested everyone should just hand out a list of the 13 Ikari Amunah and make a game out of anyone who could find the most connections. Oh, here's number 7. Here's where we have Ikar Amunah number 6. If you could find it within the Haggadah, you know, make some sort of game where there's some sort of prize or something like that to find those things. It creates a certain level of attentiveness and highlights what you're really supposed to highlight about the Seder, which is the Ikar Amunah. A lot of times people are very creative about their Sedarim, but what results is not actually what you're supposed to be talking about. It doesn't actually result in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim or in talking about the Leil Amunah that the Seder is supposed to be. Question number 9. What are some strategies for making the Seder engaging and manageable when celebrating with elderly grandparents or great-grandparents, particularly regarding Divrei Torah? I would say that if you are Zocha to spend the Seder with elderly grandparents and great-grandparents, do whatever you can to get them to talk. Listen to every word that they say. They are the most valuable people at the Seder. And you know, ask them. Ask them as many questions as you can. Ask them if they ever felt a sense of shibud in their lives. If they ever felt a sense of chayrus in their lives. What values they remember from their parents. What was their grandparents' Seder like? Those are how traditions are passed on in families. If you have that bracha in your life, lean into that bracha. Listen carefully to them. Question number 10. What should one keep in mind when sharing a Seder with family members who follow conservative Judaism? Again, one thing to be careful about, whenever you're spending Seder with anyone who's not Torah observant, you know, in the Orthodox sense, you want to make sure that the wine is mevushel, otherwise you can end up with some halachic issues. But talk about Ikari Amunah. A lot of them don't even realize that that their denomination doesn't necessarily subscribe to all the Ikari Amunah. So talk about the Ikari Amunah. I don't know what else. You know, lots of love. You know, make sure family is family, and make sure that everybody is getting along with each other. But I'm not really sure. I've never had that particular situation, so I'm not even sure necessarily what the question is really, really asking in terms of the challenges that come up. Okay, I thank everybody for submitting the questions, and looking forward to doing this again next week. Have a great Shabbos, everybody.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.